And hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Bill Bennett Show. Thoughtful conversation about the news of the day. And we try to address the existential threats to America. And I think there are some. Joining us today, Brian Kennedy and Joel Farkas. Brian Kennedy is president of the American Strategy Group. He's also the chairman of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. Joel Farkas is the director of the American Strategy Group. I am a fellow at the American Strategy Group in Washington. So a lot of American Strategy Group today. Mm-hmm. Convening of the group. First few things I'd like to discuss. So, Claude, what is your sense of the country? Make me feel better. I have a feeling the country's about to come apart.
Yeah, I guess it may depend on how you define hope or optimism, you know, if it's finding agreement somewhere. I don't know. You know, we've been talking a lot recently on the podcast about the whole, you know, gender identity thing. I think that's probably the closest point of hope that we could find as far as agreement on anything, you know, once we get to transgender sports.
What's the agreement?
Oh, I think that we're going to get to the point where it's going to be just, I think we'll find agreement in the fact that we can't have transgender athletes playing in sports with, you know, transgender men with biological men or transgender women with biological women. I think that might be the closest point of agreement.
Have you seen the numbers? Excuse me, there are majorities for what you're saying. Mm-hmm. They don't think transgendered men should be able to compete against women. But it's not 90-10 or 80-20. It's 65-35.
And I think that's because it's still, as far as, you know, for the most part in mainstream, it's just, you know, Leah Thompson swimming and no one else is pretty much aware of anything else. I think if it becomes a big deal and we see more cases, then I think you'll see the numbers go larger. You'll see an 80-20, 85-15.
Well, maybe. I'm thinking about the coming apart that might arise from Supreme Court decision. I mean, you got a leak of what's not even a decision, and all sorts of stuff went on in this country. You get an actual decision coming down, returning abortion to the states. We had a real death threat, an attempt on a Supreme Court justice, Justice Kavanaugh's house, you know? I mean, it's not good. Biden, budget, gasoline, crime, the border.
Well, what's interesting is I do think that there's probably agreement across the country as far as what the problems are. I don't think anyone will say the economy is good. I don't think anyone, you know, will say that they like the high gas prices. But I think the dividing factor is that it's split regarding what they say the solution is and who they say the problem is.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, all right. We're all in hot water, but we don't agree on how to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Or okay, what's causing it.
It's an odd sort of consensus. We're, you know, we're all boiling to death here. But I mean, there may be some literal truth to that. Apparently, there's going to be outages all over the place. Hot summer. The utilities costs are going to go through the roof. I don't know. I'm just nervous that we really could come apart. And we are leaderless, seems to me, with Biden.
Leaderless, but we also don't have any one person that a majority of people or even close to a majority of people would rally behind. There isn't anyone on the Democrat side that any Democrat is necessarily excited about. I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but wasn't it AOC who said she's not sure if she could support Joe Biden in 2024? Right. But then and also you look on the Republican side, you know, President Trump's base is still strong, but it's dwindling. And he had a lot of people who were Republicans who weren't never Trumpers, but they're backtracking from that. So there isn't the leaderless, but then also it seems like everyone's trying to figure out who the next person will be. Months ago, we thought maybe Governor DeSantis would kind of, you know, take the bull by the horns, but that hasn't necessarily taken off, I don't think. And so, I don't know. Like you said, leaderless without any prospects, it seems.
Yeah, I was interested to hear Brett Hume say the other night that Trump still commands great power, but his influence is waning. I think that's probably true.
Very true. So have you ever browsed in incognito mode? It's probably not as incognito as you think. And why would it be? Incognito mode, like the Chrome browser itself, is a Google product. And Google has made its fortune by tracking your movements online. There's even a $5 billion class action lawsuit against a company in California where it's accused of secretly collecting user data. That's right. Google's defense, Incognito does not mean invisible. So how can you really trust incognito mode? So how do you actually make yourself as invisible as possible online? You use ExpressVPN like I do. Turns out that even in incognito mode, your online activity still gets tracked and data brokers still get to buy and sell your data. One of these data points is your IP address. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location, but with ExpressVPN, your connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server and your IP address is masked. Every time you connect to ExpressVPN, you get a random IP address shared by many other ExpressVPN customers. That makes it harder for third parties to identify you or harvest your data. Best of all, ExpressVPN is super easy to use no matter what device you're on, your phone, your laptop, or even your smart TV. All you have to do is tap one button for instant protection. So if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN. Visit expressvpn.com/Bennett and get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/Bennett. Go to expressvpn.com/Bennett to learn more.
All right, let's welcome Brian Kennedy and Joel Farkas to the show. I was talking to Claude about the country. I'm worried about the country. Let's start with the economy, but I want to raise a few other things other than the economy. But Mr. Farkas, let me start with you. How is this American economy?
It's a complete disaster, and it's getting worse. It's been a disaster for a year and a half. So this notion that somehow Vladimir Putin invading Ukraine caused some issues, we can't ignore it. But it's not the cause, it's not the purpose, it's not the creation of Vladimir Putin. We're witnessing something that I studied in college in the late 70s, early 80s, which was Jimmy Carter and stagflation. And this may be worse because that was purely economic. This is beyond economics. It's economics as well as Brian, you know, so aptly understands, war looming.
How do we get into it?
The simple reason is about 2 years ago when President Biden decided to put several trillion dollars into the hands of consumers while simultaneously passing regulatory restrictions, most notably on oil and gas production, which is the lifeblood of agriculture, food, transportation, housing. You create a massive amount of demand. You restrict supply. Yes, he caused the restriction of the supply chain crisis. And what you get is inflation. And in addition to inflation, you get stagnant growth, which is declining GDP, which we experienced in the first quarter of this year. And you end up with declining growth, increasing inflation. You add to that, you know, a year ago, Jerome Powell gave testimony to Congress addressing questions on inflation. 1 year ago, inflation was rampant. And he said, it's transitory. It's not something to be worried about. It is something that it's going to ameliorate quickly. And we can get into more as to why he said that. But that's what he said a year ago. And he did basically, he said, we are not going to change monetary policy, nor are we going to change the Fed buying bonds for their to reduce rates, to increase and stimulate more demand. We're not going to change it because inflation was not something to be concerned about, was transitory, and they were going to do nothing. Well, they did nothing. Now we are looming. We have a looming crisis that we haven't seen since Jimmy Carter.
What will happen?
The Federal Reserve pays attention to something called core inflation. Inflation is really headline inflation, which includes energy and food. Energy and food. He gave a press conference Wednesday when they raised rates, stated they're going to ignore food and energy as headline inflation because monetary policy doesn't affect it. So what's going to happen? The people in America and the people around the world are going to suffer ever-increasing, double-digit increasing of food costs, energy costs, transportation costs. And they're going to be ignored by all of our policymakers. They're going to be ignored by the Fed. They're going to be ignored by Wall Street. What's going to happen? We're watching the destruction of our middle class population right before our eyes. And it's being justified by monetary policy and fiscal policy by the Biden administration. It's pathetic to watch. They're going into debt to buy food. They're going into debt to drive their car to get to work. Jerome Powell and all the economic experts have said that energy is not a major contributor to inflation. What the biggest contributor is that we have fewer people working. We have a labor shortage. We have increasing wage rates. So their solution is have fewer people working, fire more people, lower wages to consumers. What's going to happen is consumers are going to get less money for their jobs. They're going to pay more to get to work. They're going to pay more to eat. And it's just going to spiral month by month by month. And we're going to end up with a disaster.
Is there a way to salvage it soon?
Produce more energy, oil for transportation, gas for heating and cooling and the electric utility grid and refining more oil. So the inputs that go into manufacturing, much of which is polyethylene and polypropylene, which are plastics that create and build everything, reduce those costs. Produce more energy worldwide. Produce it more in the United States. Get prices down to $50 a barrel instead of $120 a barrel. We could do that next week.
But it would need the president's signature, wouldn't it?
It would need the president to not send John Kerry, his climate czar, to USC last week and state at USC, under no circumstances should anyone in the world drill or produce any more fossil fuels at all. It's
really, really, really.
Yes.
Wow.
John Kerry, who's married very well twice, is lecturing us on how to help the middle class in America.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking while you were talking, I may be wrong by a couple of other things, but not by much. Right from the gun. I mean, one of his very first acts, if not first, was ending the XL pipeline. Is that right?
It's correct. And he did that the same day. I think the same day in office, he cratered that. And he also authorized the same day, same week, for Russia to continue building the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. So he allowed the Nord Stream 2 pipeline to proceed.
Right, right.
And he killed the Keystone. And by the way, 30 days prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine in January of this year, he also had a Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, call Greece and Israel and withdraw the U.S. support to the East Med pipeline, which would deliver gas from the Leviathan Sea to Europe. And he shut that down, too.
Well, given what you said about Kerry and seeming intransigence of this administration on these issues, even if Republicans take the House and the Senate, not going to change.
It could change because the reason why there's no capital investment in the oil and gas industry is something called ESG, environmental social governance. If you're going to tell the capital investment to, if you invest in this industry, we're going to whack you and we're going to sanction you and we're going to sue you. Guess what? You're not going to have capital investment to build a pipeline, to build a refinery, to drill more wells, gasification plants.
Is it plausible to think that that attitude that you just described might change with a real slap wake up call in November?
It absolutely could change and should change. And it would really start with our Wall Street friends who are complicit in some of this ESG stuff to not do it. But they can make more money by being proponents of ESG than they can by fighting the government. And they ought to have a spine. President Biden told the oil and gas companies last week, be a patriot, produce more. Well, you know what? I tell Wall Street, be a patriot. Don't invest $4 trillion or $5 trillion in China and don't promote ESG to shut down the energy industry and domestic production in the United States. Be a patriot.
Yeah. Brian, do you have any comment on just the economic side of this?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with everything Joel has said, and I think it was very well said. It looks to me in all this that this is not an accident. This is not like a policy that just didn't work out, as if they wanted everything to get better. I think the Biden administration has had a pretty clear conception of what kind of economy they want. And they want one that is radically different than the one we have today. They mean for Americans to suffer today.
What? Why?
Well, I mean,
oh, as way of transition, that
well,
business?
the whole idea of Build Back Better is that you have to tear everything down before you build it back up in this new environmentally conscious world of ours. And so Biden has said directly that the transition from a fossil fuel economy to a non-carbon based economy, yeah, or carbon neutral economy, however you want to phrase it, is going to be painful, but we're going to be better on the other side. Not saying how long it's going to take to get to the other side. So they really do mean to have high energy prices to drive us out of our gasoline powered cars and to have us buy the very fanciful idea of everyone driving electric vehicles. So they mean to make this painful. They mean to change how our economy operates. They mean to condition us to live in a world different than the one we do today. They don't like families going on long vacations, burning fossil fuels, and doing the things that American families do normally during the summer, right? We're here on the edge of summer. Families are figuring out where they're going to go and try to have fun. And they're faced with this enormous cost of filling up their vehicles. And so this is part of the transition Biden's talking about. I think not only is it bad economics, but it shows the woke communism that has pervaded this administration.
What is the date that we make this transition? That is, we become a more green-powered economy.
We've heard the date that China's going to do it, 2070. And so I'd like to have somebody to advise me in 2070 how they did with that.
Okay. And
to Brian's point, it's absolutely correct that the policy is to suffer and have high prices. Why? Green energy is very expensive. High oil prices creates a more competitive environment for green energy that's already outrageously expensive. So what other way to create that competitive environment than to have oil prices be what they are?
So punish people with oil prices so that the comparative advantage of oil diminishes.
I want to confirm what Brian also just said and what we've been talking about. The chairman of the Fed literally stood up Wednesday and told maybe six times, a dozen times or more to every question asked that we as the Federal Reserve will not pay attention to headline inflation, which includes energy and food. He basically told 330 million Americans, we're not, our policies will not affect it. We will not pay attention to it, and we can do nothing about it. Now, how in the world could you possibly tell 330 million Americans, 200 plus million of whom rely on, other than housing, the most expensive thing they pay for every day? That's ludicrous.
With that in mind, let's talk about some other aspects. I want to lead with you, Brian, here. Claude and I were talking before you guys came on about the country, and I'm worried we're sort of coming apart. Remember, that's the title of Charles Murray's book, but are we coming apart? Justice Kavanaugh, there was an actual death threat and attempt on his life. He lives there with his wife and two children, small house, because of a leaked Supreme Court draft at best. Suppose we get a decision on Roe v. Wade, sending abortion back to the states. Can we say from the example of the leaked draft that the intensity of the response will be commensurate? Brian?
I think that's right. Later on, we could talk about my optimism, which I am strangely optimistic about the country.
Wow, I do want to hear about that, but let's say lose everybody. Yeah,
right. In the short run, I'm pretty pessimistic that we are coming apart and that we are in this war of sorts, a political war, an information war, certainly, about the meaning of the country. You look at the left today and you have the Democratic Party and they are perfectly comfortable with Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and other elements of the radical left talking about proposing and engaging in violence of the kind you saw with the threat against Justice Kavanaugh. That kind of complicity is a very dangerous thing in our politics. They are so animated by these woke social issues, whether it's abortion or transgenderism, what have you, that they are fine with Antifa and the other parts of the left burning down America's cities. There's a lot of talk right now about burning down pro-life centers around the country, religious centers around the country, threatening violence. Now, the fact that the American left is silent about that or encouraging that is a very dangerous thing for our country. Now, that having been said, I think very few Americans are actually animated by this. Whatever your views on whether you're pro-life or pro-abortion, whatever your views on that, only a small segment of society is that's their only issue on either side. The vast majority of the people in this country are pretty sensible about these things and are worried more about putting food on the table and making sure they can buy gas. And so politically, I don't think this is a winning issue for the left, but that they really don't have many issues right now. And so they're gonna ride this abortion issue as far as they can to see if they can animate some part of their base to come out and vote.
Brian's correct. But I know it might not sound like it, but I also have optimism too, because as you asked earlier, Bill, what can we do about this information? I mean, part of our conversation is acknowledging what's happening. And that's number one. But then what do you do? Well, what you do is lower gas prices, lower housing costs, lower food costs. It's really that simple. And that will have the most immediate impact on the vast majority of American citizens.
But how do you do that?
So food is affected by energy. So when you lower energy costs, you do it by producing more, which you don't have to produce a lot. The world uses about 100 million barrels per day, and we produce about 100 million barrels per day. The United States, since the Biden administration took office, has reduced its daily production by about 2 million barrels. We could easily encourage, through existing infrastructure, to produce 2 million more barrels a day, which would crater the oil prices. Crater them from 120 down to something like 80 or 70 or even lower. We would do that. Two things would happen. One, we would lower food costs and energy and transportation costs and heating costs. Number two is we would take money out of our adversaries around the world who pretty much rely on waging war through their revenue generated by oil and gas sales. I mean, we now even have Saudi Arabia having so much money, they're going to create their own golf tour, which I don't have a problem with them creating their own golf tour, but if they weren't making trillions of dollars, they wouldn't have that. They wouldn't have an extra $100 billion to spend. So that's how you do it. Now, how do you do it with housing? You produce more housing at a lower cost, which is based on energy also. And I am doing that now. I'm going to be producing housing that is better than what people are currently producing, and it's going to be $200,000 less expensive. We can do these things. And we do it in spite, not because of government regulations. Right now, our headwinds are with an administration that would like to decimate people living in single family houses. They want to decimate people having reasonable fuel costs. They want to decimate people from having reasonably priced food. And that's what Brian has been saying. It is not an accident. It is purposeful. And I know that might sound hyperbolic to some, but I would defy someone to please show me the evidence that the administration and the woke progressives do anything different than what Brian and I are saying.
It strikes me that yes, we could do everything Joel just described, and that makes eminent sense. And what the administration is doing is the exact opposite. And not to dwell on this point, but they mean to do the exact opposite. They want to destroy and tear down the country. They want these environmental regulations to make prices for oil and foodstuffs and everything else more expensive. They really do have this view that if you radicalize the American people, they can win politically. If you make things worse, you will somehow be able to establish, as crazy as this may sound, a political narrative that vilifies capitalism, white people, white supremacists, etc. And they'll be able to, in this radical view of the world, recreate the country.
Let me just interrupt. I mean, I want you to finish, but
yeah, please.
Let's go back almost 2 years, the election. Moderate Joe Biden, not Bernie Sanders, not Elizabeth Warren, but moderate Joe Biden. We need someone that kind of the middle of the road, the unifier. What happened here?
Well, moderate Joe Biden is the one who said he wanted to destroy the oil industry. Right? He said that during the debates. He would destroy the oil industry. He would destroy fossil fuels. Turns out, old moderate Joe Biden is not so moderate. And now, and he surrounds himself with a cadre of people who themselves are very radical when it comes to these things, which is one reason why I believe he didn't actually win the election, if I could be so bold. Because Americans weren't buying all that. They enjoyed the prosperity that they had under Donald Trump. But now Biden is in there, and he is doing pretty much exactly what he would said, what he said he would do. And they'll push these environmental policies, and they'll align themselves with every bad idea in the hope that they can remake American society in a very fundamental way. And that's what they're doing. Now, you asked a question to Joel about, well, what can you do about this? Well, you could elect Republicans in November and they could impeach Joe Biden, right? I think he's very likely to be impeached come January.
You do. You do.
Absolutely. But let's just, without delving too far into that, let's say he was impeached and probably not removed. But let's say he was impeached. Do you think that's going to chasten him at all about these things? No.
No. No.
He's going to continue down this very path, because this is his one chance at making his mark on the United States, and he's taking it. And he's going to ride this to the bitter end. The Republicans are going to fight it. They're going to try to delegitimize this way of thinking, and they're going to try to make the country better if they can. But this shows what is at stake in a presidential election, that when you are the president of the United States, you have enormous power over the future of the country. Donald Trump had an amazingly good run at making the American economy better and the American people safer. Joe Biden is now in control of Washington, as frightful as that may sound, and he is doing what he wants to when it comes to changing the economic and security outlook of the country. He is putting his mark on the country, and the Republicans, not in the majority today, are doing a very poor job in stopping him. And it is going to be the job of a better crew of Republicans. And the American people need to be animated to actually look at everything the Biden administration is doing and to add their voices to common sense calls for not merely reform. Reform really is not enough, but getting America back on track. And what we're seeing today is a very dangerous thing, both economically and politically, for this country.
I don't want to lose sight of the promise here of some optimism at the end of this discussion. So I'm going to ask our listeners to stay with us as we're, you know, listing the woes and our worries and go abroad. Comments, guys, on what we've talked about before. And I, you know, you guys have educated me on this. Ukraine, Russia, China, Taiwan, how vulnerable are we? Is the risk greater than it was a month ago, 2 months ago, a year and a half ago? Where do we stand, Brian?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, things are in a much more dangerous spot than we've probably ever seen. The whole situation in Ukraine.
Than we have ever seen.
Well, the mere fact that Joe Biden is the commander-in-chief should give everyone pause. Mm-hmm. Here is someone who family looks, he and his family look to be corrupted by the communist Chinese, but also the Russians and also the Ukrainians. And so that's not an encouraging thing. He looks not to have himself entire control of his faculties. And that's not too confidence inspiring given the crisis we're in. The Chinese, as we discussed last time, look to be preparing to invade Taiwan. That could be a month away, 6 months away, a year away. We don't know. But they're making those preparations. They have a new aircraft carrier, the Fujian, that they just launched. It's very technologically advanced. They have very advanced fighter aircraft they're working on. They're working on very advanced ballistic missiles and ballistic missile defenses. The Chinese are in a position in their, at least in their own minds, very soon to be able to dictate events in the Far East. And we are not preparing adequately for that today. That is a dangerous thing. In Ukraine, the Ukrainians have fought a very noble fight with very limited resources and look now to be armed potentially by the Biden administration against, I think, their own best judgment. They would, I think, be happy for Putin to take eastern Ukraine. And I think the French and the Germans and the Italians pretty much believe the same. They'd be happy for Putin to take eastern Ukraine and call it a day. The Ukrainians, I don't think, want that. They want to fight for all of Ukraine. And we'll see in the next few weeks whether or not the Biden administration actually arms the Ukrainians. Now, if they do that, you could have stability in that part of the world, or at least maybe a stalemate. Or you could have the Russians using tactical nuclear weapons in order to end the war. And the use of tactical nuclear weapons, of course, is a dangerous thing, because once you start using nuclear weapons, you don't know where that ends. And you're not quite sure how the Europeans are going to respond. You're not quite sure how the United States is going to respond. And so we're in a very tough spot there. And one just hopes that cooler heads prevail and that the United States can, even under a Biden administration, do the kind of things that caused the Russians and the Europeans to take a step back and to negotiate for some kind of peace that doesn't provoke, you know, war, further war in that part of the world. But as I say, we're in a very dangerous spot there. This all comes down to really the president of the United States and whether he's going to operate out of a position of strength the way Ronald Reagan did, or is he going to be weak and provocative the way a Jimmy Carter was? So we really are back in the late 70s in so many ways, as Joel was implying earlier.
We worried about Russia and China separately, each acting separately against us. Is there a worry that they could act together against us?
Oh, I think they are acting together.
You do.
In whether it's Ukraine or Taiwan, there is some open source intelligence that would suggest that the troops that the Russians sent to Ukraine were not frontline troops, but mostly conscripts. Some open source intelligence that would suggest that. And also that same open source intelligence was suggesting that very elite Russian troops have been prepared to assist the communist Chinese in the event of an invasion of Taiwan. Remember that in February of this year, they signed a joint strategic document.
Yes, that's right.
That pledged their alliance together and their unity together. And it was mostly discarded by Western media, but they themselves took it very seriously. And this podcast took it very seriously. And anybody in Washington who cares about the country sees that the Russians and the Chinese can operate pretty well together. And, you know, we've sanctioned Russia when it comes to their energy sales and who's bought them up, but the Chinese. I think the Russians are doing just fine. The Chinese, you know, they have their own problems, but they've managed to work their way through them before and are likely to work through them again. And for right now, they see Joe Biden as a bit of a mark that they can take advantage of, and they are taking advantage of.
Well, if you stipulate hatred and contempt of the United States on the part of both Russia and China, and add to that an assessment of our vulnerability and lack of leadership, this would appear to be a propitious moment. I almost hesitate to say it, but from their perspective, they may not get a better opportunity than this right now. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're communist China and you have an ambition to take Taiwan, which you believe is your territory, would you do it now under Joe Biden, or would you wait for the next Republican president? Which it wouldn't take too difficult a political analysis to see that you're very likely to get a Republican president next time if there's free and fair election.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a MAGA president, an America First president, either Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis. And you probably aren't going to be able to go invade Taiwan with impunity for the next 4 to 12, 20 years, depending on how things shake out. And so why not do it right now?
Yeah. Joel?
Energy independence. Western Europe abdicated that concept. And now everything that the United States tries to do with Russia and Ukraine or China is begging NATO allies as to whether or not, how far we can go with sanctions or other kinds of actions, because Western Europe is dominated by delivery of oil and natural gas to supply their manufacturing and their heating. It is so clear that if you start with your entire energy supply being compromised by your adversary, you will be in propitious, precarious situations continually. All that's happened with the Ukraine invasion by Russia and China's efforts to go after Taiwan is an agreement, as Brian just said, between Russia and China. Oil prices are high. Russia's making plenty of money, and they just changed their buyer. And their buyer happens to be someone they're going to be militarily aligned with against the United States and Western Europe. I mean, it's so clear. You don't even have intelligence. You can just read the paper and actually not listen to an opinion by a journalist who doesn't know what they're talking about. Just read the facts. And guess what? If you are not dependent upon, I don't know which country in the world could defend itself or even wage war if they were not dependent on themselves versus their adversary. I don't know. I mean, Sun Tzu in The Art of War never said, go get all of your supplies, your food and your energy from your adversary. They never said that. So why would we sit here today in 2022 and believe we can do that and then literally have to beg every single NATO ally as to how we respond each week to an attack? We have to do that because they are completely complicit and they've abdicated their own sovereignty to their adversary.
The audience loves the conversations we have and love you two guys. However, they've said from time to time, wow, it's kind of discouraging to listen to. But, you know, we want the facts unvarnished. As Joel was just saying, whatever they may be. But I'm going to move ahead to schedule because I need a little tonic. Maybe the audience does too. Both of you guys hinted at optimism, that you're somehow optimistic. How can you be optimistic amidst all these things we have been talking about? Can we start with you, Joel?
I go to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and see an amazing expansion of loving liberty, raising families, home ownership, kids. It's a wonderful example of America. I Keensburg, Colorado, San Antonio, Texas. There's 19. More than 19,000 jurisdictions in America, and I choose not to pay attention to the 10 largest cities that have DAs that want to, basically throw criminals back on the street. So, again, it's where I choose to focus my attention, and I focus my attention on what I believe is the vast majority of American citizens who love freedom and liberty and love family formation and creation, and who want these things that we're talking about. We can find that optimism by just listening. You know, communication is substantially not talking. It's substantially listening. And we can listen to those Americans who are pursuing those ideals. They're out there. And Brian sees them. He knows who they are. He knows the voters. He knows who they are, where they are, and how they voted.
Yes, very well said, Joel. You know, I was listening the other day to the gal who's the Michigan Attorney General, Dana Nessel. And she's a Democrat and a pretty radical one. And I thought, she's really among the best that they have. And I was extremely encouraged by what she said. She said, drag queens are not hurting our kids, but drag queens make everything better. Now, she's the best the Democrats have, or among the best. And in the middle of this economic and cultural and political crisis.
Did you say drag queens? You didn't say dry cleaning.
No, drag queens.
Drag queens make everything better.
Now, dry cleaners do make everything better. I'm a big supporter of the statement, drag queens are not only not hurting our kids, but drag queens make everything better. Now, this is the attorney general of a very large American state. I was extremely encouraged by that because I thought to myself, if this is the thing the American left wants to talk about, how great drag queens are, we may win 435 seats come November. Yeah. Because that kind of craziness, that lack of just common sense is just wild in our politics. Why, when things are this bad in the country, are people falling on their swords over drag queens? And it shows just how out of touch the American left has become. And I found that extremely encouraging because it's not like the other side is all that good. I mean, they're evil. And it turns out they're also stupid because a really clever politician would not be talking about the need to have drag queens in every school. They'd be talking about the things that matter to American families. And I, for one, think that the American people will look at all that and just be completely appalled.
Claude and I were talking before you guys came on. And Claude said, well, you know, I asked him the same question I asked you. Claude said, I'm kind of optimistic. Claude, you can speak for yourself here, okay? He said, you know, I think American people are coming together on something like the transgender, guys becoming women and then competing in sports. And, you know, they're coming together on that. There's consensus. And I said, gee, the last thing I looked at wasn't 95-5 or 90-10 or 85-15 or 80-20. It was closer to 62-38. If that's accurate, Brian, Claude, Joel, is that the ground for optimism that it's 62-38? I'm kind of worried about 38. Is it possible that 38 is the number that might be representative of the same view as the Michigan Attorney General? You see what I'm getting at, Brian?
Yeah, I don't buy that. 38. Okay. No, come on. That's crazy talk. I don't believe that for a moment.
This is like the poll that has Kamala Harris matched up against Donald Trump and Harris edges him out by 3 points.
Yeah. This is
crazy
nonsense.
Talk. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Complete crazy talk.
One of the great industries in America today are weddings. People are not getting married and having children because they want their child to grow up as a drag queen.
Yeah, not okay. happening. No,
but you guys do know what's happening in the schools, right? This is where I work every day. I mean, there's a lot of this.
Thankfully, Bill, you've been right for several decades on the school system. And the solution is homeschooling and getting people out of the school system. Yeah. If you can't change, by the way, what are people doing when they can't, it's so untenable. They're getting out.
And the monopoly and the monopoly is kind of crashing in on itself. I mean, the behavior of the unions during COVID and so on, but no, I agree with that. It's easy to take on, I don't want to get distracted here, but it's easy to take on critical race theory if you're teaching something called critical race theory. And people can say, well, that's horrible. Let's get rid of that. But it's the more subtle versions where it influences people's thinking and so on and so on. And there are a lot. I mean, we were talking to some people in rural North Carolina who told us their seven-year-old was invited by a counselor to join a discussion about choosing your gender. This wasn't New York or San Francisco, Joel. This was rural North Carolina. I don't want to exaggerate and say it's 38, but I don't want to minimize either, because I think we've done a terrible job in the schools, to say nothing of the universities. All I need to hear is that somebody has a university degree and just wait for the nonsense to spew out, you know?
Yeah, and Bill...
Go ahead. Yeah, and then I want to come back to Brian. You respond first, Joel.
I share your concern. I don't want to deny. I'm not denying that woke left progressives do what you just said they do. Of course they do. But what we have is an institution, a monopolistic institution that is promoting it, funded by the federal government. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, these schools are funded substantially by property taxes in every locale in America. So guess what? That's what happens when you have a tyrannical institution take over something. So what we do is we change that somehow. And the government's not going to change. They're not going to eliminate their power. They're not going to reduce their property taxes that fund them through these regimes. But the American people are slowly waking up, and I'm on their side, and I like watching it. It's hard to be optimistic when you have people talking crazy like this. I submit and yield to that. But thankfully, we still have liberty and people in this country who love it. And, you know, I hope, which is a bad plan, but I hope that they will prevail.
My last point, I want to go back to Brian. There's a lot of nonsense out there, but I guess that's my point. It's out there. I mean, it's in lots of places. It's not just, you know, in the big cities and universities. It's in rural North Carolina. It's catching on or not. I mean, I don't know.
I think we're in a spiritual war in this country as well.
You betcha.
And that there are some dark demonic forces that have enveloped the entire earth, and they are doing very strange things to this planet and having very otherwise, I won't say sensible, but otherwise what should be good people believing the kind of nonsense that normal people just don't believe in. The idea that drag queens are a good thing, or transgenderism is okay, or that we should be entertaining these thoughts. This is a demonic force, pure and simple. This is not like there's, you know, educated people believe this nonsense, but that's really because their sense of decency and morality and their spiritual well-being has so been corrupted that they're willing to believe this kind of stuff. But unless people recover the good that they know exists, both from God and from reason, then all is lost. But I just don't think all is going to be lost, because I think still, without being overly spiritual here, that the children of light are still going to prevail. And decent men and women, they're going to see what the right is, and they're going to defend the right with everything they have, the way Americans have throughout our history. And we're not going to let the forces of darkness prevail. As strong and powerful and vocal as they may be, they're not going to win, because we're not going to let them win.
Brian, you could be more aggressively spiritual as much as you want, because the spiritual energy of this world throughout generations has prevailed through very difficult times, if you said. Dickens' book, Tale of Two Cities, the best of times, the worst of times. This is not a new concept. But people that have performed and pursued what Brian is describing, and Bill, what you adhere to, love of God, love of spiritual energy, caring for things that are beyond themselves, that's what prevails.
Readers of the New York Times, college graduates, sophisticates, so-called, and would-be sophisticates, hearing Brian talk about demonic forces, would say, oh boy, there we go. There's the fringe. There's the crazy. And that's not a small number of people.
Have them read Dickens. Go back and read A Tale of Two Cities, just the first paragraph. Don't read the whole book, because it'll waste your
time. Yeah. It's a long book.
Paragraph. And then tell me how smart they are. They're not as educated and smart as they pretend to be.
I agree with that. But what I'm saying is they're not, maybe not 38, but they're not 3.8 either.
No, that darkness has enveloped a large number of them, for sure.
Okay.
Come with me to Idaho.
I'll introduce you
to the 85%.
Yeah, but see that. Okay, is it 85?
Yes.
Okay. Brian, is it 85?
Totally.
Okay.
If you're going to put a 7-year-old child in front of a drag queen, mm-hmm, or a doctor to tell them that transgenderism's okay, mm-hmm, we know it's not science or knowledge. It's not even, forget science nowadays, but just knowledge. You couldn't point to a single thing in either in the body of knowledge that humans have acquired or their common sense. You could not explain putting drag queens in front of children as a good thing. You'd have to point to something else. And my explanation of things being demonic, there are demonic forces. Satan is real. And the power,
there you go.
The power of, no, well, the, It happens to be true. The power of demons to control the lives of men have been the source of modern evil since the dawn of time. And the idea that because we're somehow educated, as my one good friend Bob Curry always says, edumacated, we're so edumacated now that we no longer believe in things that used to guide us or used to make sense to us. Okay, that's on the spiritual side. And I think
I'm asking is how many Americans would hear this and then say, okay, I've heard Brian, I'm leaving this conversation. Forces of darkness, demonic. Okay, let him leave, but how many are there? Again, we'll stipulate him in the wrong circle.
We'll stipulate him in the wrong circle. Well, it's funny you say that, Bill, but I know more sort of people who are not political or not spiritual, who I just have conversations with, who will shake their head and they'll start talking about demonic forces.
Okay. Justice Holmes used to say there are fashions in the intellectual world. And we know, intellectuals, trade in nonsense, maybe more than any other group. As a friend of mine said, but with a PhD, it's nonsense on stilts. And this, I love that phrase. And this nonsense then gets passed around on the news and so on. And people pick it up.
Let me try to chime in. I won't even use the word demonic. There's very few people I know that don't agree that there are unexplained energetic forces, unexplained, inexplicable. Where'd this come from? How did it happen? It makes no sense based on what I was taught. There's no doubt that almost everyone I know that's serious believes that. I mean, Albert Einstein created the theory of relativity and quantum mechanics based on opposing the orthodoxy of what science, what settled science was of the day.
Yeah.
So this notion, I mean, Brian mentioned science doesn't exist today. If you question, you're not supposed to question science. You're supposed to agree with settled science. That's nonsense. Science is questioning science. And it's acknowledging there are unexplained, inexplicable things. And anyone who doesn't agree with that is unserious.
Can I give you my optimism, though? I never really gave you my optimism. I need to get onto this optimism, Bill, before I lose it. But you look at this election in the primary vote we had in California and around other parts of the country in the last week. And you saw in San Francisco that the district attorney, Chesa Boudin, whose parents were members of the Weather Underground, and he was a Soros-backed district attorney who was very soft on crime. He got recalled in crazy liberal San Francisco.
Yeah.
Because even in crazy liberal San Francisco, like they recalled members of their, I think, school board. They recalled their district attorney because even in the most progressive parts of the country, they see that there is a moral right and wrong that needs to be punished when it crosses a line. And Chesa Boudin did not believe in doing that. He got recalled.
And if you can, and if you can do it there, make it there, you can make it anywhere, right?
Right. So you talk about
San Francisco. Okay.
Right. You talk about fashion. Okay. That's a rejection of fashion when he gets recalled.
Yes, now, that's right.
Other pieces of good news. You get this gal, Hispanic gal, Myra Flores, in 34th District in Texas. She runs on the motto of God, family, and country.
Mm-hmm.
And she wins a seat that's been held by the Democratic Party since Reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a happy warrior filled with just light and goodness. And she wins that congressional seat. That's encouraging. In Southern California here, you have our good friend Scott Baugh won the equivalent of the Republican nomination in California's 47th district. Scott's a happy warrior, solid America first candidate. He'll go against Katie Porter, who's one of these fashionable liberals. He'll go against her in November. I think he is going to win that race. In Nevada, you have Adam Laxalt, endorsed by President Trump. He wins the Nevada Senate primary. Adam's a great guy and a happy warrior, good friend of ours. Jim Marchant wins the Nevada Secretary of State primary. So he'll be running for free and fair elections in Nevada come the fall. This is just 1 week of primaries. These things are happening, and they're happening all around the country. And so even though the country is coming apart, as we talked about early in the conversation, it's also coming together in some very important ways around political leaders, many of them pretty new to the process, but who see that the country can be lost, but are not going to let it happen, and are making great arguments to the American people about what it takes to bring us together. And so even though things are bad, I'm very encouraged by the movement in the country and the coming together of the American people around these folks.
Last thought, Joel.
Thank you, Brian. My last thought is, I love what Brian just said.
My last thought is, I got to laugh. You guys are Californians, at least, you know, a lot of the time. And hell, if Californians can be optimistic, then who am I to be pessimistic?
Washington will do that to you, Bill.
I'm in North Carolina at the moment.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, but I'm going back. Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. We're going to pull out of this, yes or no? Yes.
Yes, you bet we are.
Republic will be saved. Yes, Joel?
Yes, we are. Lincoln said it. You wrote about it. We're gonna carry on the best we can, but we're going to win.
But it's not self-correcting.
Right.
For all the listeners, they have to join the fight and get engaged in whatever ways they can to make sure that the country is saved.
One cannot ignore crisis, which shouldn't be referred to as pessimism. It's just realistic acknowledgement.
Right.
And then you go do something about it.
Such as, Brian?
People are running for school board. They're running for office. They're becoming party committeemen around the country. They're signing up for all sorts of things. Look at the moms at the school boards protesting this nonsense. Yeah,
yeah. And parents aren't going to let their kids be raised 40 hours a week by people who want to do what Brian and you were describing. Bill, you've been describing it for decades, what these schools are doing to their children. They're not going to allow more.
By God, I'm outvoted. I'm optimistic. At least I end this conversation optimistic. We're going to hear from the listeners, and you guys are going to enjoy their responses, okay?
Thank you, Bill.
You bet.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much. And that does it for today's show. To catch up on previous episodes of the show, go to thebillbennettshow.com. You can follow me on Twitter, William J. Bennett. You can like me on Facebook. Just search Bill Bennett. Feel free to email the show. I'd love to hear from you. It's BillBennettPodcast@gmail.com. Please share the podcast with your family and friends. We'll catch up next week.